Welcome to the Collaborative Business Podcast. My name is Peter Simons and I'm your host. In today's episode, Tim Fitch is my guest. Tim is a management consulting specializing in construction, and what you will hear today is that in construction there is a lot of collaboration involved. We will talk about BS 11000s, mega project collaborations, and collaborations between suppliers and customers, as well as collaborations between partners. As usual, the show notes of this episode can be found at petersimons.com. Then search for Tim Fitch or look for the podcast.
Collaborative businesses are on the rise, and this is the Collaborative Business Podcast, a podcast that will help you find answers and provides useful insights to the best ways of working together in partnerships, alliances, and many other kind of business-to-business collaboration. Here's your host.
Tim, good morning. Actually, it's morning and we're almost in the same time, so welcome to the Collaborative Business Podcast.
Good morning, Peter. Yes, and good to speak to you.
Thank you. Welcome. And so before we dive in, Tim, why don't you introduce yourself to the listener and explain who is Tim Fitch and what do you do?
Yeah, sure. I part own and run a management consultancy called Invent, which is spelled I-N-V-E-N-N-T. And it's a business consultancy which operates solely in the construction sector. Our clients range from large corporate bodies who commission large infrastructure and construction projects, and then also into the supply chain, right from the top almost to the bottom. So we have clients who spend billions of pounds a year on infrastructure, clients who have turnovers constructing infrastructure and buildings in the same sort of scale, but also we work with their supply chain as well. So some of our smaller clients have very small turnovers but very niche. So just to give you an example, we have done a lot of work recently with Crossrail, which is building the new London Railway, and Network Rail. And a lot of their suppliers, the tier one suppliers like Balfour Beatty, BAM, which is obviously based in the Netherlands,
yep.
And a number of their competitors and people that they collaborate with. But also we've gone down into the supply chain. We work a lot with owner-managed businesses, and again, their scale varies. From the measured in the hundreds of millions all the way down to single figure millions. And we did a very interesting little exercise with a business which is Lumberjacks, and they do work on the railways cutting trees down, and that was a very interesting project. Obviously a very, very coalface type commission. And that's one end, one scale. And right at the other end, we're talking to Crossrail about their mega project. So we're involved in all sorts of things. We do an awful lot of stuff in what obviously is of interest to you, which is the collaboration space. But we also, with the owner-managed businesses, look at strategy. We also look at supplier engagement, which is obviously allied to collaboration. And also we have a big piece on marketing, where I've always been a big advocate of relationship marketing now for about 7 or 8 years, and I'm a firm believer that it's one of those things, along with a more collaborative outlook, which is going to take construction in the UK to the next level.
Interesting. So it's a very broad field you provide to the to a very focused segment of the industry.
Yes, our strap line is creating value through construction. So that's what we're about. That's what we're really passionate about. And we see collaboration as being one of the enablers of achieving that goal.
Okay. And when we talk about collaboration, what is for you collaboration?
Well, collaboration for us is it's really about how businesses can create more value and manage risk better across a contractual boundary. that was how it started out. So construction's actually not that bad at collaborating. It's far from perfect, but it is used to bringing groups of people together to deliver projects. What we know and feel and have experienced in our careers is that it's not as good as it could be. And we've, particularly in the last 3 years since we've been running Invent, we've got involved with a lot of large joint ventures. And it suddenly dawned on us, although we both had been involved in joint ventures for many years, that the internal workings of joint ventures are often not considered enough, so that their performance is suboptimal. So for us, it's about creating the right set of systems and processes, but really much more about attitudes, much more about behaviours, and frankly, leadership. Mm-hmm. Leadership's actually the key, in our view. We've seen many examples where you've got a willing team that just hasn't had the right direction. So that's where our thoughts are on what collaboration's about. It's about creating an environment where people from different organisations can come together, create more value, manage the risk better, so there's a better outcome for everybody.
Okay, and so you indeed already include the separate businesses where they come together, separate organizations.
Yes, and I think I'd be even more, I could add a little bit of extra colour to that, because it doesn't have to be totally separate legal entities, as I'm sure you've known in your own experience. It is not always easy for different teams within the same organisation to collaborate. There can be barriers there, the silo mentality within an organisation. So if you consider, let's say, during the bid stage for a big project, you need a lot of internal collaboration, as well as being able to demonstrate nowadays, because the procurement process on big projects in the UK often has an element of assessment of collaborative ability of the team that you put forward, but also, and this is as well as the systems and processes, so the collaboration is now becoming a competitive environment. It's part of the selection criteria on the larger, more complicated infrastructure projects, particularly in the rail sector. So we see, and of course, with the more complicated opportunities, the large multi-£100 million projects which are being procured in rail and also in the water industry in the UK, they're often delivered by joint ventures, and the joint ventures form for all sorts of reasons, partly to spread the risk, maybe to have a broader range of internal services they can offer when they're together, and so on and so forth. But the key with those teams is that you've obviously then got to collaborate internally on a project, but where that internal party is actually a separate business. So you're trying to form, in effect, a new team from two businesses which are generally competitors.
At what moment do you get involved? Do you already get involved the moment one of the partners in the team wants to work with the other, and you are involved to help create a team, or are there other moments that you are getting involved?
No, we get involved all along the timeline. So one of the services that we offer to our clients is a strategic view or insights into an opportunity. So to give a recent example, there's a new piece of the London Underground being built, or will start being built next year, which is the extension to the Northern Line. We started giving strategic briefings on that opportunity back in 2012, And the procurement of it started in terms of tendering just before Christmas last year. So our involvement was at multi-stages. So we were giving strategic advice on the opportunity and all the politics around it and so on and so forth a couple of years ago. And then last year we started working with one particular team, and that involved at a very early stage bringing the separate parties together, but also helping them develop a strategy, develop the customer insights, develop the competitor insights. So that's one particular example. Others, we sometimes just get asked at tender stage to help develop the response. There's often a quality element now that asks you to talk about collaborative leadership, your relationship management plan, things like that, and then also help prepare the team that goes forward for the assessment day, which is often part of the selection process. Mm-hmm. So that's how we get involved on within procurement, where collaboration has become part of the way of differentiating teams.
Okay, so you mentioned one term in the information you sent me as a result of the invitation, and let me ask a question, a twofold question around it. What is BS 11000 and how does it fit into the collaboration space?
BS 11000, what is it? Well, BS 11000 is a relatively new British standard, which was first published in 2010, with the guide coming a year later. Now, the purpose of the standard is to set out a three-phase model or framework to help businesses plan or strategize, plan and manage their relationships with other parties. And there's three phases and eight stages. So the other parties that it's aligned towards could be a customer, which is obviously the way most people think, or a business's supply chain. There's also two other potential elements. One is internal, so where you have, you know, to try and overcome the sort of silo mentality that can happen in larger organisations. And the fourth element is other stakeholders. So as an example, where you are working in a complex piece of infrastructure, there may well be a number of other very important external stakeholders that you need to collaborate with to ensure that the project is a success. Most commonly, though, people think of it as either their customer or their supply chain.
Okay. That's clear. And interesting that most people think of it as from a supply chain perspective, where but that's probably my bias. I would mostly think of it as a partnering perspective.
Well, it's very interesting because obviously collaboration means it's not an absolute precisely defined thing. And also a particular situation, as I'm sure you're aware, if you or I were going to go and buy a can of soup, you don't really need a collaborative relationship with your local supermarket to buy a can of soup. Or if you were buying some standard office supplies, it's just a transaction. You just go and buy a ream of paper, or as I did the other day, a new microphone for my computer. There's no relationship there. I just went, got something that had the right sort of price and bought it. On the other hand, if you take a very extreme example going the other way, in the UK there's a big push to try and take a large amount of cost out of railway infrastructure in terms of both constructing new infrastructure, replacing age expired infrastructure, and also maintaining it. And it's the railway industry has understood, it's quite clear that the only realistic way of being able to get the added value that people are looking for is through collaborating through the supply chain. So, for instance, the rail authority in the UK, Network Rail, is very keen to collaborate with its tier one suppliers, but understands that as they only perhaps deliver 70 or even 80, they only deliver 20 to 30% of the project themselves, and the rest comes through their supply chain. They are keen and very interested in how the tier twos and tier threes are brought into the collaboration, as an example. So it depends where you are in that supply chain, whether you think you're collaborating just with your supply chain, just with your customer, or both. So Network Rail is obviously looking down only. The Tier 1 could be looking up and down. The Tier 2 could be looking up and down. And on the very complicated programs, and I'll give you a good example, is the signalling program at the moment, which is a nationwide control from the centre program for Network Rail. There's also a very strong case for saying that Tier 1s should be collaborating with their what would ordinarily be their competitors, but actually on this program they're trying to deliver the whole thing for Network Rail, albeit there are three key suppliers there. So some of these relationships are much easier to conceptualize by everybody than others. So people collaborate with their customer directly, they can understand what that might look and feel like. They can also see what it might look and feel like to collaborate with their direct tier two supplier. Mm-hmm. But when you add in these other dimensions, it becomes much harder for people to conceive what it might look and feel like. And you get additional resistances that you don't necessarily get ordinarily. So, for instance, people start throwing in things like, well, I can't collaborate with my competitor because it's anti-competitive. And therefore, you get into these sort of moral arguments and moral dilemmas about, well, what does that actually mean? When you obviously, as a business, you have to make sure that you are keeping everything aligned with the local legal position. Mm-hmm. Whereas all of those protections are set up to protect the market from anti-competitive behaviour. And what we're actually trying to do in a particular situation is increase value for everybody, including the customer, who is basically, in terms of signalling in the UK, the market. And so there are those sorts of issues which make it quite difficult for people to really get their head round about what it might look and feel like. And of course, that's where there's a lot of added value to be made in terms of improving the understanding of what is possible and how to do it.
Yeah, and how far does BS 11000 help there, or do you really still need a experienced guidance from people like yourself?
Right. Well,
I realise there is only one answer possible.
I will try and answer that in the most objective way I can.
Okay.
BS 11000. It's a framework standard. To say there's eight stages to it, grouped into three phases, and it's imperfect, but by the same token it is the only one of its kind that I'm aware of in the world, and therefore it's the gold standard.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to follow everything to the letter, one of the downsides of it is it can appear to be quite bureaucratic, but my experience is that on big, large procurements, it's not so much the bureaucracy, it's the fact that it's iterative, and therefore the bureaucracy comes around more than once, because certain parts of that eight-stage process have to be revisited as you pass through the different phases. And also, once you're actually working with your partners, during the whole journey of delivering the business outcome that you're trying to achieve. So the answer is, the standard with its guidance document is very, very useful. To get the maximum value and to enhance the speed and the quality of the collaboration and your efforts, obviously I recommend that you have some guidance and some help from people who do all the time and who have had a broad range of experiences of working with it, you know, obviously in the different circumstances. It often helps, particularly where you're talking about joint ventures, where there are a number of parties, is if there is a trusted outside person helping them get through the various stages, because it does take quite a lot of negotiation and compromise to get the thing to work. I think one of the, and this has been said by the guys from Socia, who I know very well, that one of the key facets of collaboration is that people have to give up some control to get the benefit of collaboration. And that's true of the different parties within, say, a joint venture, as it is between the joint venture and the customer and the joint venture in their supply chain. To take a quite a complicated situation. Because, yeah, it's not so different from, you know, being married, or, as I've just found out, you know, living with your parents-in-law temporarily. You have to give up some control for the benefit that you get at the end of it. And that is best facilitated by an outside party for exactly that reason, because everyone has to give a little to get a lot back.
Excellent, I understand. And you mentioned the gentleman of Socia, Alex Cameron, was on the previous podcast episode.
Yeah, well, I know Alex very well. But we've done some work with David in collaboration.
Okay, and David was 10 episodes back on the podcast.
Yes.
It's a small world.
Yes, it is.
So when we look at your experience, is there one particular collaboration that you would like to share, that you can share, that taught you the most on the topic, that was the best learning experience for you?
Yes, I think so. I mean, I'm going back a couple of years now. So this is at the very early stages of BS 11000. And we'd been having various conversations with Crossrail about their project. And at that stage, they'd got most of their big heavy civils procured. And it was the way that the procurement worked out was that they ended up with five or six quite complicated joint ventures and one contractor delivering on their own. So they had essentially six or seven big teams delivering a large part of the work. Or in fact, I think they were doing all of the big contracts. I think at that time there was a general feeling within Crossrail that things weren't absolutely tickety-boo in terms of the way that they were working together. And they asked us to do a piece of research amongst their own team and also the supply chain. So we did a series of 18 interviews, some with the Crossrail people and some with their supply chain. And we were looking at how people perceived how those different interactions were working. So between the joint venture and Crossrail, between the joint venture and their own supply chain internally within the joint venture, but also across the piece. So how was there much collaboration, or was it perceived that there was much collaboration across the piece? And that was, it's quite an intense piece of work. And what came out of that, we saw, was that there was a great, what's the word I'm looking for? There's a lot of willing people involved in it on all sides who everyone was in almost unanimous agreement of better or further collaboration than where they were at that time would benefit them and the project. Second thing was they all admitted that the things were less than perfect. And I think the other thing that came out of it for us, which was really perceptive, was that you got quite different views coming out from different people within the same JV. And that was probably the big learning piece for me, that just because you've brought three businesses together and you've won and you've been successful during the procurement phase does not straight away translate into having excellent performance and excellent service. And when we dug a little deeper, you could see some of the things, some of the causes of that. And that's been very enlightening, I think, for the future. So, for instance, one of the key problems were where there was a difference in culture between the different parts of the joint venture. And that was, to be frank, that was most often manifest itself where there was a non-UK business as part of the JV who had a different culture and a different perspective on the UK market from their team members. And so one of the things learned from there was that, A, when you're selecting your partners, which is obviously part of BS 11000, obviously culture is a very important thing, but recognizing the difference is even more important.
Yeah.
And then understanding whether the difference is going, you know, the difference in culture will have some positives and some negatives. And the question is, can you manage the negatives? Can you get the most out of the positives? And does the difference between the two import acceptable risk or not? So that was a big piece of learning there, that was a big piece of learning there. The other one was that, and we've seen it again elsewhere, is that a team can have very good interpersonal relationships, but it doesn't necessarily mean that translates into, and I'm talking about at the joint venture board level, that in itself does not guarantee or even give you any expectation that the team itself will be effective at giving direction and leadership to the delivery team that sits below them. And I think the third thing is that in terms of governance of the contract, how does the JV team, board team, or JV board itself, does it actually help or hinder the collaboration with the customer and client? So, for instance, is the delivery team that sits below the board empowered to make decisions at project level and do the day-to-day communication with the client? Or have you got the balance right in terms of stuff that needs to be referred to the board before a decision is made and empowering the team to get on with the project? So therefore, these JV boards, one of the things we found was that where they worked really well, they were supporting the team, they gave the direction and leadership that was required, they took care of the governance, which will obviously be separate for different businesses, going back to their HQ, which can often cause friction, whilst at the same time maintaining the high level relationships with the client that's required. And that's quite a fine balance to get those different elements in harmony.
Yeah. Interesting. So when you look at and all that together, what would be your number one recommendation for organizations that enter into a collaboration?
Well, I think the first thing is, the most important thing, right at the very start, is that, and this is loosely based on BS 11000, is that you need to select your partners very carefully. So the key thing is, why are you, and I'm talking about now forming a joint venture or an alliance, why do you want to do that? What is it you why is it you really want that, to bring other members into your team? So what weaknesses have you got, and what additional strengths do you get with the other party? Once you've decided on what the type of business that you're looking for, I'll go back to this thing, the partner selection. Once you've got that criteria, you've got to be very sure that you've got a reasonably good chance of making a success of the collaboration, which means that, you know, I've mentioned the culture is important. It's the committed leadership is very, very important. You know, we have this saying that, you know, to collaborate effectively, the leaders at the top need to be consenting adults, and they need to tell, or not tell is the wrong word, you know, they need to give that leadership to their own teams, that we are deciding to collaborate with this business and this is why, and that, and you know, I'm backing it to the hilt, because what you often find is people joint venture for the right reasons but with the wrong attitude. So it's, so have you got the right skills and everything in the other party? Are they committed to it just as much as you? And then it's about, do they feel right? So the first one's, you know, tick box, does it look right? They've got the skills, they've got the resources, they've got experiences which are going to enhance what you're doing. But are they... yeah, how's their culture? Is their culture compatible? Absolutely. And if where it's not compatible, do you understand the differences, and can you see that you can manage your way around it? Because, of course, if they're exactly the same as you, unless you just needed to split down the commercial risk, you're not actually gaining anything from the collaboration. But if for instance, they're more... astute commercially, you might think, well, that's going to add some value, but what's the downside of that? Are they going to be too aggressive commercially with my customer, my supply chains? So I would then need to understand where that might go, and in a sense negotiate with them that there's a place that we won't go to in terms of commercial aggression, as an example. Key one that we've come across is where, particularly where you've got you're bringing in a party from overseas, apart from the cultural difference, which can manifest itself in all sorts of different ways, you know, the UK has got extremely high safety standards in construction compared with other places in Europe. So if you're going to team up with a European partner who may have all sorts of wonderful skills and a strong balance sheet and what have you, are you prepared to take the risk in terms of, say, safety performance? But just as importantly is, well, okay, we understand that there's a weakness there, and how are we going to manage it so that it doesn't actually manifest itself in our collaboration? So those, and they're quite difficult conversations to have with a third party, as you can imagine. But they are those sorts of grown-up adult conversations you have to have, and you are much better having them at the start or before the start than you are when you're once you've been successful and you're delivering a project, you don't want safety issues to become apparent.
No. I agree.
For all sorts of moral reasons, but also it's bad business in the UK to have a less than excellent safety record is bad business. So they can be quite difficult conversations to have, but they're very necessary.
Excellent. Well, And it's interesting also how you described already the... Well, it's part of the cultural difference or the way you do things around in the UK. And that an external party, especially not from the UK, needs to understand when coming to do business together with a UK partner. When we look at the collaboration space, is there a specific book about collaboration or business that you would like to recommend to our listeners?
Well, I would recommend, I mean, the one I think's a very good one is Socia's book.
Collaborative Leadership.
Collaborative Leadership, because if you've bought the BS 11000 standard and the guidebook that goes with it, that will give you the nuts and bolts about how to do collaboration and gain some certification. But, as I said before, collaboration is all about consenting adults, and their book, I think, gives you a very interesting overview about how you might set about doing that.
Excellent. Well, I will link to it in show notes. So, Tim, where can people find more about you and Invent?
Well, we've got a website, which is a brand new version. And you can find that at www.invent.com. And there's some downloads there on BS 11000. There's some case histories coming. Lots of detail about what we do and what we're up to and who we've worked with. So I'd hope people would find that interesting. Please get in touch through that. You can sign up for various newsletters and what have you. And we'd be very interested to hear from people.
Excellent. And also, therefore, you made it very clear that's the double N in the Invent, but I will make it even easier and link to it in the show notes. Is there anything you would like to share with our listeners that we have not yet discussed?
I think what I'd say about collaboration, and I'm talking about the UK context, it is quite a high level skill, particularly in terms of leadership and then the behaviours that you need to make it work. But it is the next step up in terms of creating value in construction, in my view. So good luck to everyone with their efforts, and as I say, we're entering a great phase in the UK. Construction's booming. Not just infrastructure, but the commercial side's picking up very well as well. So it's good times.
Excellent. I'd like to thank you for your participation in this podcast, Tim. And also thank you very much for highlighting the UK specifics, because we haven't seen that before yet in our podcast. And not necessarily the UK specifics, but highlighting the fact that countries do things different, and so the country background highlights also the culture.
Yeah, that's right. And it's not to say one culture is better than another. It's just to understand that where they're different, you need to understand it and then work it out to manage it.
Yeah. Well, excellent. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
So far for this episode of the Collaborative Business Podcast, this week with Tim Fitch. Thanks for tuning in, and if you liked what you heard, please leave a review on iTunes. As usual, the show notes can be found at petersiemans.com, and look for Tim Fitch or search for the podcast, or the other way around. So far for this week, we'll be back next time. Until then.